You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Transform the way you hunt with the all-new Base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com. The Southern Ground Hunting Podcast is brought to you by Spartan Forge. It's forged in combat and tailored for hunters. Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products that save the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You can start your free 14-day trial today by visiting spartanforge.ai, and you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND, that's all lowercase, all one word, SOUTHERNGROUND at checkout. And that'll get you 25% off of your purchase. You wanting to know more about saddle hunting? Well, check out tetherednation.com for all your saddle hunting needs. Tethered is for saddle hunters by saddle hunters, and they're redefining ultralight hunting. If you'd like to support the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast, you can visit patreon.com/southerngroundhunting, or you can click on the link in the show notes of this podcast episode. We offer two different tiers for our patrons that offer a solid list of benefits. We'd love for you to join the Southern Ground Hunting community today. Again, that's patreon.com/southerngroundhunting. And now, let's get to the show. Hey guys, last year was a wild year for censorship for hunters and anglers. We've partnered with the social media platform Go Wild to combat mainstream social media censorship. Go Wild was built by outdoorsmen and women and by hunters and anglers just like you. Go Wild is a free social community. Not only are your photos not censored, they're encouraged on Go Wild. Go Wild gives you points for things like sharing your trophies, gear reviews, and inviting friends. And as you earn points, you start to unlock awesome rewards too, such as gift cards, free stuff, knives, huge discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex, and so much more. Oh, and if you create a free account, you can unlock $10 just for trying it out. Visit downloadgowild.com to get started. Well, all right. This is going to be the last episode of turkey season. How y'all feeling about that?
I'm feeling I only went one time.
I flipped the page and I've already been looking at maps. So
that's true.
I can get back in my turkey boots real quick and do one.
Yeah. Are you, Matt, are you done? Like, is Georgia over? And
Yeah, Georgia went out Sunday.
Sunday, okay.
I had big plans to go that week, and I didn't even go.
Just content, man. You got to be content.
Yeah,
Is anybody else still in?
I was good.
Yeah.
Up north.
Northern, like Wyoming, yeah. Kansas, I think, is probably open still. Nebraska, Wyoming.
New Hampshire.
Yeah, then a lot of those northeastern.
All those PA.
Yeah. So they're still in the thick of all of it. And man, I want to still be in the, it's hard to get out of turkeys for me. Like, it's hard to get out of the turkey mode. Deer season, like, just kind of, especially when you're from Alabama,
mm-hmm.
from the South, you got early openers. It is so long. And by the end of it, you're like, okay, I gotta be done. I'm ready to be finished. And then there's another state that's still open. You're like, well, I guess I could go hunt Mississippi, you know, or
yeah. The only thing for turkeys for me is when it starts getting hot, and you know, the mosquitoes go mm-hmm. out. I mean, I'm in the woods enough as it is, you know, much less when the green up hits and it's thick and you're just trying to still kill a turkey and it's 90 degrees. That's kind of when I'm like, I like those cool, you know, 45 degree mornings. That's spring turkey hunting for me.
I like it too.
Ticks were bad this year too.
Ticks were.
Gosh, I just walked out my front yard and walked back in. I had three. I'm like, this is just, you know, so it's.
Well, I've been, my body's telling me it doesn't want turkey season to be over because I've been
laid up in bed all day today, throwing up and sick. And I was like, man, I guess I need to text the boys and figure out when we're going to do a podcast.
Shoot, you've worn yourself out, Parker, when you travel as much as you have.
I know, you've been everywhere.
And done the things you've done. I mean, that's I think I'd throw up for 2 days to be able to do what you did.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Got the Grand Slam done.
Okay, so hold single on, Bart. Season. This was my question. Did you set out to do it, or did it just kind of just happen? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I don't care about the slams. Honestly, never have. It's no like yeah. I completed my like lifetime slam, I guess, whenever I did the Osceola hunt, the first hunt of the season. So within the first like 10 minutes of daylight on my first turkey hunt, my slam was complete as far as like your lifetime slam, which is what most people are trying to do most of the time. And but I got to thinking about it, and it was like, well, man, the way I've set up my season, I'm going to hunt Alabama because it's where I live. I'm starting off the season in Florida. I could potentially kill one there. Hopefully. I mean, my goodness, guy ought to be able to kill one in Alabama as much as I get to hunt. And then the thing in Texas, my uncle had bought a bunch of property that we were going to turkey hunt. So I was like, well, we're going to go turkey hunt there. And that was that was all my plans. I wasn't going to go out west this year until I realized, like, man, the only thing that I'm lacking would be a Merriam's. I could just do a quick Merriam's hunt somewhere and try to make that happen.
I remember in our podcast when we were talking about what each of our plans were, you were like, I've got all these hunts set up, and I would be a fool if I killed a turkey in all these states not to go chase that.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, as we watched, we were like, check mark. Okay. He's got to do it now.
Yeah, it was, and I almost didn't, man. Like, I went to Wyoming, never hunted Wyoming, not for deer, turkeys, or anything. I've never even been to Wyoming.
You saw a ton of deer though.
Oh my gosh, dude. Let me tell you about some deer in Wyoming. Good Lord. If you were to sit down for any amount of time, 5 minutes in Wyoming, if you were to just sit down in the woods, find a random place, sit down in the woods, you're going to see a whitetail. I mean, it was dumb how many deer were out there. And I don't know all the regulations and stuff on deer hunting out there. I know Wyoming has a lot of like draw stuff and units and all that stuff, but, it wasn't necessarily that way for the turkey and, but yeah, so we started out, which I'm not going to, we've done podcasts on all these hunts, but I killed the two Osceolas in Florida. And so that, to me, that was going to be the hardest one, honestly, because if I lived in Florida, which I did see now, I don't know if it's always been this way, but on the NWTF that actually tells you what turkeys you need to shoot for your slam, now it's saying Florida or Osceola. So you can consider any turkey that you shoot in Florida, no matter what part of Florida, as the Osceola in your slam. Just thought it was interesting.
Huh.
It says like,
but in the back of any true turkey hunter's mind, he's going to go to South Florida and try to shoot him.
Yeah, below the imaginary line for sure. But yeah. Like Adam's turkey that he killed in northern Florida, it was Osceola for sure. Mm-hmm. And like
it was above the imaginary line.
And I think that's why they did it, because there's just no way of actually knowing. Anyway, so yeah. I figured that was going to be my hardest one because I was limited time. The Osceola is, by a lot of people, it's known as the hardest one to shoot in your slam, especially if you don't live there. But that happened really fast there in Florida. I mean, it was quick. It was first 10 minutes of the first hunt. We roosted that bird the night before, killed him when his feet hit the ground. And then a day of filming my buddy Jared. And then the next day went to a new place, just a regular old walk-in public area, and killed a bird at 9:30 in the morning. So I killed my two in Florida really, really fast. Alabama, though, my dad asked me the question, in the podcast that me and him did, he's like, so what was the hardest one that you killed? And it was without a doubt my Alabama bird. When you actually look at how much I hunted in Alabama, like I hunted a lot. I hunted a lot of days.
Yeah.
And I killed two turkeys. So like my ratio was bad.
Yeah, I remember you were always, you know, I'd text you one morning or something, well, we're going to go see if one's gobbling, you know, but you had, and you had what happens to me. You had one that he had your number.
Yeah.
And it just, it got under your skin. You said, I'm going to hunt him every day of the season. You know, it got you and your daughter. And did it get you and your dad as well? He kind of put the slip on y'all too. Or was that a different bird?
It was the same one. I called him into like probably 25 yards for dad. Like right at gray light, that joker flew off the roost and came straight to us, and I could see him, and dad couldn't see him. And I wish with everything in me that my dad would have killed that bird, because then I wouldn't have focused on him. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever do that again. I'd like to say I won't.
It's awful. It gets you hung up, and it mentally impairs you almost, because it changes your style of hunting as well as your ability to go say, hey, there may be a more killable bird over here. I hear that term a lot. You know, this bird was ready to die. He came running to the gun barrel. He was ready to die. But then some birds, they're slick, man. I mean, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, he did. He was, and I think I'm the one who educated him, honestly, because those first couple times, he was going to be a pretty relatively easy bird to kill if I had, number one, been by myself whenever I had my little girl that day. Dude, that bird was dead. He was dead. Then if I would have had a gun in my hand the day I called him in for my dad, I'd have killed him, you know, in that situation, because that dude was coming. Yeah, I don't know if I'll do that again. I'll try not to fixate on a bird, but I nearly killed him my last hunt, my last week of Alabama season. I was really close, but also, missed 2 weeks at Alabama too. So there is that, you know, there was time left, but I missed 2 weeks of the season. So,
Yeah, I was hoping you'd make it over to Georgia, to hunt with me, but man, you were going.
I was going a lot, and yeah, that Eastern was probably the hardest. The Rio was incredibly easy. Way too easy. It was a situation, if you haven't listened to the podcast I did with my dad, it was a situation where the landowner was showing us the property, which, by the way, was not I've had this question asked to me if we went to an outfitter. We did not go to an outfitter. I can't afford an outfitter. But dad had a buddy who owned this property that we ended up going to, and both of us killed a bird there. But that one was easy, man. Like, got out of he was showing us around in the little Ranger or the Kubota that he had, riding us around the property lines just so we kind of knew how it laid out. It was 6:30 in the evening. And
y'all just opened the gate and it squeaked and he gobbled, right? And that's how y'all called him in.
Pretty much. That's about how it felt. No, we got out of the Kubota and he was like, hey, there's a high point right up here. If y'all want to go check it out, you can. So we did, and put on all of our stuff and went up on that high point, and a turkey got, I hit a call on the glass call. It was windy, West Texas wind, hit a call on the glass call, and he gobbled. Gee, it sounded like it was 800 yards away. He gobbled forever away, but he kept gobbling back to the call. So we moved forward. Me and dad did. Jeff went back to his Kubota. And we moved forward to a big opening, a big open pasture, like a cow pasture. And on the edge of this cow pasture, I called again, and he sounded like he was 300 yards maybe. And then we stood there, we're like, man, what do we do? Should we just set up right here? Should we just do this right here? And he gobbled again, and it sounded like he was like right there. And I look up, and you can just see him standing over there and like running to us. And he came in strutting and gobbling, doing stuff. And by 7:15, he was dead. And then dad killed killed one the next day in the wind. So it was really cool. And then there was Wyoming. And that's the one we haven't talked about.
No, not at all. But real quick before we say anything about Wyoming, y'all go back and listen to that episode with Parker and his dad. I really enjoyed watching it. There's some key factors in those stories of the turkey hunts, some funny stories as well that I personally took away from it and enjoyed watching it. And that was a great job on Parker and his dad's part. But we've got the grand finale to talk about now.
Yeah. Grand finale. And it was a finale, let me tell you. It was unlike any other turkey hunt I've ever had.
Set the stage for him, Parker, real quick, of where you were, where you were traveling to, how long you were traveling to. You were going solo, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Not recommended. Do not do a Western hunt solo if you can help it. That country is just so big. It's so vast, and there's no telling, as you'll hear in this story, there's no telling what could happen out there. Not even necessarily, like, when you think Western, you think, like, mountain lions, bears, whatever. And not even necessarily that, but, like, just the, it's so big. Such a big area. And because me and Dad killed our birds so fast, I was actually able to go, and I was going to have about 9 days in Wyoming. I had scheduled the whole week in Texas to be in Texas, and then a whole week in Wyoming. Well, with drive time, when you factor in drive time and all that stuff, a week in Wyoming ends up being about 3 days driving there and then driving home. And so I was able to make it a lot faster, and got in there, went solo. And when I hunt, I'm pretty much like, I'm not a, I don't have to have nice area, you know, nice living conditions. I slept in my truck, found a truck stop pretty close to the public land that I was hunting, and slept in my truck. I took one of those little propane grills, and basically the only reason I took that was to heat up water for coffee and freeze-dried meals. And ramen, and lived off of that, and peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. That was pretty much it. And I was trying to keep costs down just because gas is so expensive. Gas is $4.21 at the time, $4.20 or so a gallon, dude. And I mean, that gets crazy expensive, and I didn't want to fly because I wanted to have my vehicle.
Now, when you were sleeping in your truck, I know the time we went on a hunt, you just slept in the front seat. Are you still just a front seat sleeper?
Yeah, until I get my camper shell.
Okay, I was wondering if you got a camper shell or not, or yet.
No, I will. I've actually, that's in the works right now.
They're great.
Yeah, a guy that used car salesman around this area. They take the camper shells completely off of their trucks when they get ready to sell them because nobody wants to buy trucks with camper shells. And I was like, "Hey, what do you do with those?" And he said, "We just give them away." Yeah. He's like, "It's all you. Next one I get for that truck, it's yours." So I'm gonna get one. But I typically just sleep in the front seat. I just lean it back and sleep, and I sleep really good like that actually. And I've tried sleeping in the back seat, but you're so like
curled up.
You just can't stay comfortable
in the fetal position.
Yeah, you can't. And it was fairly cold there too. So I want to have the ability, if it gets cold in my cab, to just turn on the truck heater real quick, let it run for 10 or 15 minutes and then turn it back off. But, that's about when I do a hunt by myself solo, if I go to Tennessee or Kentucky or anything like that. Man, I ain't getting a room. I'm not getting a hotel. And also, here's another thing, too, about it. I don't like to set up a camp, like a tent, especially when there's options of places that I can go. I can go to one part of the state that might be 2 hours away. I don't want to be tied down to one area because I definitely don't want to have to get up 2 hours earlier and drive 2 hours to get to a place. If I'm going to go hunt a place that's 2 hours away, I just assume drive there, sleep there, and just kind of be mobile. I do that with deer and turkeys, but that's something that I try to do most of the time. But I will say this, it is lonely when you're out there in that country and there just ain't people around. Like, there's, it's rough, man. You ain't got nobody to talk to, you know. I'm fine with it most of the time. Like, while I'm hunting, I like to hunt by myself. But when you come back from hunting, it's like, well, I guess I'll just call people. And then,
yeah,
you know, people don't and always answer. Yeah, no, it's not. And so, man, I just, it was rough. But the first day, I rolled in there around 5 o'clock in the evening and got there, got my tag, did all my stuff, found the truck stop that I was going to sleep in. And I was like, all right, I'm going to head to the woods. So I headed in to a random spot, a completely random spot, to be honest with you. I had a bunch of spots pinned that I thought I would be able to get to, and turns out I couldn't. They were private drives and all kinds of reasons why I wasn't going to be able to make it into those spots. So I was driving around. I was like, well, this looks like a good spot. I'm just going to walk in here and see if I can find one. And so I walked in, got up the mountain, and probably a mile and a half deep, and struck a bird that was only about 50 yards away from me. I mean, and he was gobbling really, really good right there around 6 p.m., 6:30. And I tried to make moves on him. If you don't know anything about Merriam's, they don't come to your call. They might gobble at your call, but in my experience, they do not, especially if they don't have a hen. They just don't. They don't come to it.
Just kind of wonder.
Yeah. They
mind
don't
know where they're gonna go.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's really more of a get in front of them type situation, or walk slowly. You know, try to cut them off, cover a bunch of ground, and try to, you know, jump one up. That's really how I've had to learn to hunt Merriam's. When I went to Nebraska last year, we were trying, man. We were trying to, like, set up on them and get them to show up, but they would just get, if you set up, they would be 4 miles away by the next time they gobbled, you know. It was just a weird thing. So, but it was close to dark. I knew there was a turkey gobbling in there, so I didn't want to push myself or anything. Well, I woke up the next morning, went right back in there because I figured he'd be roosted right there. Well, I was in for a surprise because I had probably about the best 10 minutes of turkey hunting that I've ever had. I mean, it was just like, it was insane. So, two
just
hens.
Just how much they were talking, pretty much.
Oh my gosh. And how many of them there were in the same spot. Mm. I sat in that same spot till dark, and I never even saw a turkey. I heard the one gobbling right there pretty close. Dude, there was turkeys roosted literally right above where I was at dark, and I never knew they were even there. They had to have just already been up there. That's all I can tell. Or they just moved a little bit later than our birds typically move. That's mm-hmm. possible too. You know, they could have been on another mountain and roosted up, you know, flown up there from another ridge top or something like that. I don't know. But I get in there, and I was going to get in there really early. Well, that's a hard thing to do in Wyoming because it starts getting daylight at like 4:30. So I'm hiking in there, and the sun's already coming up. I don't even need a headlamp. Well, I get to this point, and I hear two hens going crazy. I mean, and Merriam's hens, dude, they're like, they sound like a public land parking area on opening day. They're like, meow, 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 meow.
It's so ugly.
Yeah, they're it's bad. I haven't heard them do a whole lot of just like cuts or anything. They're just always yelping. And so these two hens start going crazy, and I'm paralleling them. So if you can imagine, I'm on like a bench of this hill, and they're on the spine of that hill. And as I'm walking, they're walking, and we're walking together. And I'm just a little bit right below them. And at first I thought they were still up in the tree, but the further I went, the more I'm like, they're walking with me. And so eventually I cut up the hill to the top, and got to where I could see them. And I could see both of those hens up at the top, probably 50 yards away, 40 yards maybe. And I was just watching them. And I'm like, okay, at some point this bird's going to gobble. The gobbler's going to gobble. Well, then I see him, or I see one coming up from the other side of him, like right in front of me, probably 70 yards away, walking to him, strutting. I was like, holy crap, he's right there. My gosh. And they meet up and congregate right there out of range. And so the two hens, and as far as I know, that one gobbler. And he gobbles like once or twice. And I was like, man, this is awesome. I need to get in front of him. So I cut around, go down around the mountain, trying to get to where I could cut him off. And I see like five more strutters next to this other strutter. And they're all just running around, dude, strutting. And the hens are going crazy. At this point, they haven't really gobbled much, but there's like five or six of them, maybe seven of them standing right here. And they're just moving. And I'm like trying to cut them off. But I'm in an open area. I don't even, it almost looks like a green field, but they're not.
And I'm trying to grass flat.
Yeah. Just like a little grassy flat. It's real pretty. And, so I finally get to a tree and I make a call and they gobble, all of them gobble at the same time. And they're off to my left behind a clump of trees. Well, then another bird or two, maybe more than that, two or three turkeys gobble up here back where I had originally seen those hens at. And I was like, son of a gun, I should have just stayed put right there. But I never could see those turkeys. All I could see was the other one. And they go up over the hill. I was like, all right, well, if they go over this hill, once they all go over that hill, I'm going to run over to the edge of that hill and see if I can see them, because they should be just right below me. Well, I go over there and I see a hen, and there was another bench, and she kind of goes down into this real steep ravine. And I was like, well, crap, they went fast. And then I see another turkey strutting on this same bench, probably 40 yards down below me. And he's walking on that bench. He was one of the gobblers, and he's strutting, dude. He's a big old bird. So I pull my gun up and I get it on him and pull the trigger, and my flipping safety's on. And so I'm like, crap. So I click my safety off. By the time I do that, he's already over the edge of it, out of view. I couldn't see him anymore.
Yeah, you were telling me these things move fast. Like, they're like, they're not just like our turkeys where they'll stop, look around. No. They're getting it.
They're moving. I mean, in that matter of time, from the time they flew down till in that 10 minutes, they covered like 300 yards probably. Fast. And then after that, covered so much more ground. I mean, I didn't hear another turkey gobble until 1 o'clock that afternoon.
So did, with these birds, like going day to day, did they roost in different areas every time, or would they make a huge loop, cover a ton of ground, and then come back and roost in that same area?
That's what they would do. They would, I don't know that all of them came back to the same area or if it was even the same ones, but that day I found a roost tree. I found the roost tree that they were in, and it was like a sea of doo-doo underneath it. Like, mm-hmm. More turkey crap than I had ever seen in my entire life underneath, and feathers, all kinds of stuff. You could tell they spent a lot of time here. The problem is, that was the only day I got that wasn't windy, and it was a perfect day. Like I said, I got on, I think it was the same group at 1 o'clock. I ended up just covering ground and kind of like going the direction that I thought they should go. And I ended up coming and getting, in range of them actually, but just blocked by a bunch of trees. And same story, different time. You know, I hit a call, the hen called back, three birds gobbled together, and they were gobbling really good at like that at 1 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And so I made a move to get closer to them. And when I made that move to get closer to them, they gobbled again. It sounded like they were a mile away. Like, and that within a matter of just 2 minutes, maybe.
Shoot.
They just were, but they were following this drainage that would end up kind of circle. It went onto private land, and then it would circle kind of back up around to where I started out at. And I think that's what they were doing. I think they were just going to end up circling around. And by that point, I got back to the truck. It was like 5 o'clock or so in the afternoon. And I wanted to go and sit by that roost tree that evening, but I would have had to climb back up the mountain that evening after I just pretty much hiked. I think I did like 12 miles that day or something like that. I was tired. Dang. And it was the first day.
Worn out.
But long story short, man, I mean, they didn't do the same thing the rest of the trip. I think I saw one more hen in the 4 days that I stayed there. I heard birds gobble every morning, but it was so windy, like 40 mile an hour gusts.
Yeah.
Once I put this video up.
I was about
to
say.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're contributing the change in the way the birds were acting due to this extreme wind.
Well, and I don't even
know. I don't like hunting wind around here. I can't imagine. I know it's pretty brutal up there. I've heard if you're hunting the wind.
It's a lot open up there, isn't it?
It is. And like where you're actually hunting at is really wooded, but it's surrounded by plains, you know, like. You just have wide open plains all around this national forest. And so it's like, there's really nothing to block it. Like at the truck stop that day, every evening, it would just be rocking my dang truck. There was dirt, sand everywhere. It was bad. Like it was so bad to where you couldn't hear them. Like, that was the worst part. I can deal with the wind pounding you in the face. I'd hear a gobble every morning. Every morning there was birds gobbling. But I'd just be walking around in circles trying to figure out where they were at. Like, I knew there was a turkey gobbling. I knew I did not have a clue which direction they were coming from. Because at one point they would gobble and it'd sound like they were right in front of you. Then again, they would gobble and it'd sound like they were, 500 yards away. And so I would walk up, sit there, sit down and call for a little bit. Then he'd gobble again and it sounded like he was back behind you. And it was just really frustrating. Well, on day four, I ended up waking up like 3 o'clock that morning, just sick as a dog, like just nasty, sick, dry heaving. Honestly, the way that I feel right now.
Was it altitude sickness?
I don't think so. It was only like 5,000 feet. It wasn't like crazy altitude or anything.
All that ramen he ate.
I mean, ramen, truck stop coffee, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there is no telling what it was. I was pretty hard on my body, but not any worse than I normally would be, I don't guess. But that day I woke up, it was Mother's Day. It was on Sunday. And woke up and I was sick. I was like, well, I need to go, I need to go anyways. This wind supposed to start picking up until like 8 o'clock. I can at least have that amount of time. Like I've been waiting for this. I need to go. So I go up there and get up on top of that mountain and hear bird gobbling. Two of them gobbled that morning. So I set up on them, just run around in circles. The wind ended up starting around 5 o'clock. You know, it was stupid windy at 5. And so I sat down at one point. I was like, I'm just going to sit right here because I'm not feeling good. Then I hit a call. I don't know if it was something about when you hit a diaphragm call, it kind of opens up your sinuses a little bit in your nose. I hit that call and my nose just started pouring out blood. Mm. Like, just nasty. And when I say, like, have a nosebleed, like, it's not just like it just, you get a little bit of blood. Like, it's like
gushing.
Like, dripping blood. Like, leaving a blood trail. All of my leafy suits just covered up in blood. Even right now, I didn't have anything to stop it up with. So, I'm just, like, holding my gloves. So, they're, like, soaked in blood. Everything's just bloody. It gets to be about 7:30 and I'm like, I can't do this. And it's still bleeding. Like, it's not stopping. I was like, I got to get back to the truck. So I walked to the truck, and as I'm walking to the truck, I'm like getting lightheaded and getting wobbly leg, and I never felt like I was going to pass out pretty much in my life. I've never had this feeling, but when I was hiking out downhill, I was like, I might pass out. And so that was, when I tell you that going out west solo is scary, it's situations like that that you can't foresee. That you know, it's not like I have a history of passing out or having seizures or anything like that. I have a history of, you know, pretty good health. You know, I don't get sick a lot. And, man, I thought I might die. I was like, if I pass out, I haven't seen another hunter on this mountain.
Yeah. You know, and that you, and that's, you know, you go into hunter safety on this, another whole thing. But like, if I'm going out somewhere by myself, even if it's here in Alabama on public land, I'm like, hey, this is where I'll let people know, hey, this is where I'm hunting. You know, if something happens to me, you don't hear from me, because sometimes you don't have phone service.
Mm-hmm.
So come check me out. And especially if you're doing a hunt like that, you know, you want people, and I know people are aware of where you were, but, you know, that could have been serious.
It could have. It really could have. Luckily, I made it to the truck and drove back to the home base, to the truck stop, and I sat there for 5 hours contemplating, like, what do I do? I called my wife. I called my dad, knowing that both of them are, like, they're loved ones, right? Like, they're going to be the ones that are going to be like, you need to head home. Like, you need to be mm-hmm. close to somebody. I also called Walt, because Walter is going to be the guy that's like, dude, stick it out. Keep going. Stick it out. Get better. Take a rest. Take a break today. Get back after it in the morning. You're there. I would give my left nut to be there. You know, like, that's the kind of guy Walter is. Even though in the same situation, Walter, a lot of us would be, you know, trying to figure out what we're going to do. He even said that. So I call Walter, and I was like, man, I need you to knock some sense into me. Am I being stupid for thinking about leaving? And he was like, no, I'd probably leave. And I was like,
not what you wanted to hear.
Yeah. He ended up going into that and saying, like, you know, if you think you can stick it out, you should, because you're there and this is your goal. You know, he gave me the pep talk part, but at the end of it, it's like, dude, if you feel like you need to leave, you probably should. But here's the best part of it. He gave me a piece of advice that I thought was really good. As a creator, as a content creator, he was like, you need to document how you feel right now. You need to pull out your camera. Because at that point, I'd been like, ugh. Once I got that nosebleed, I filmed that, and I was like, I'm done. If I decide to stay, I'll pick it back up. But for right now, I'm not filming anything.
Well, yeah, because the only text we got was like a picture of like blood on like a stump or something. And I'm like, well, either Parker's dead or Turkey's dead. You know? So, and it was just left hanging. And then all of a sudden, like sometime later, we get the rest of the story.
Yeah. So I ended up deciding to leave, basically. I head home. My initial thought was, I'm going to just take kind of the long way through Wyoming and just instead of going like through South Dakota and then down into Nebraska, mm-hmm. I was just going to drive Wyoming, basically the border of Wyoming, trying to find a turkey, either in a small private land or like a field or something like that. Just see. But then the rains just started flooding down. It started raining. It was calling for snow the next day. And it was like, no, I'm just going home. I'm just leaving. I'm going home. So I made it all the way through Wyoming and just right across the border into Nebraska. And dude, Matt, I called you that day. What would you say how would you say my attitude, my feelings were at that point?
You were pretty down. I mean, to have such a successful season, you were just kind of like, man, this sucks. Like, we all had high hopes. We all had high expectations. And it's like you said, you know, you hold yourself to a higher standard. Like, hey, I'm gonna go kill a turkey. And when, you know, your body physically doesn't let you, it's like, well, dang it. You know, like, we can make these bodies our slaves as much as we want, but when they're done, they're done.
It's one thing, Drew, you'll understand this. You got kids. It's one thing, kids are all sick, wife is sick. So there's situations like that, dude. I'm out. I'm leaving, and I'm not going to feel bad about it. Right? Like, there's those situations. And then there's these ones, like you're saying, Matt, where it's like, I am literally in charge. I'm in charge of this decision. Nobody else is making this decision for me. I'm in charge of it. Man, that's
mentally you would have stayed, you know. Yeah. You were gonna stay there until you killed a turkey, but physically you were not able. You know, I think if you said, you know, if that happened at the beginning of your trip and you had like, you know, six more days, hey, let's sit a day or two out and I'm gonna bounce back. But you were, you know, you had your limited time. And with everything going on, it was best, hey, I need to, you know, start easing on back.
Yeah. I talked to my dad, which me and dad talk a lot, you know, especially when I go on those trips. I call him a lot and we're talking. And it's just like, man, this sucks. Like, I was just in a, you have deer depressions, you know, where people get depressed because of deer stuff. I don't know what you call this, turkey depression, but it's like my season's done. It doesn't have to be done. I've still got like 5 days left that I could hunt this. And
which, by the way, guys, Parker does get depressed really easily, especially during deer season.
That's true.
I mean, I can't tell you how many phone calls I get where it's just like, Parker's like, I'm the worst hunter of all time. I'm eating pancakes because I'm the worst hunter of all time. And I'm like, it's not that bad, Park. It's just really not, man.
It is true. And I like to say I'll stop being that way, but I don't know, man. I may not. Nah,
every year it'll get somebody.
Yep. But so So kind of wrapping up the story, not kind of wrapping it up, but there's actually a lot more to it. I make it right across the line into Nebraska, and I had to stop. I had a client that I had to do some work for my business, and so I needed to stop at a place that had a McDonald's so that I could have internet. And so I found a bigger town with a McDonald's, did my work real quick, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna set up shop right here. I'm gonna sleep for a little bit. Woke up the next morning at like 6:30, probably 6 o'clock, 6:30, and started driving. Well, we were talking about letting people know where you're at all times. I'm like really specific. Like, I wouldn't give anybody my location on my phone, but I give it to my dad because I know my dad's not going to come in and poach the spots that I'm hunting.
Exactly.
So dad has my location at all times. He knows if he knows where I'm at, he looks at it during hunting seasons. He looks at it, knows where I am. If something were to go wrong, he would know. So he got up and saw that I was driving, so he calls me, and we're talking, and man, dude, as the sun starts coming up, I just see turkeys everywhere. There's freaking flocks along of turkeys with 4, 5, 6 strutters in a flock just sitting out there on these fields, and I was like, man, this is awesome. So I pull up my maps, and I start looking at public land areas, and if you're familiar with a lot of the western states, they have these walk-in hunting areas. They have BLM land. They've got like little tiny WMAs. So like, whereas most of our WMAs are going to be a few thousand acres at the smallest, probably here in the south. Out there, they've got like 150 acre WMA that just kind of randomly placed out there. And there's a lot of them. There's like more than what you would probably imagine. And so I pull up my mask and I'm looking and I'm talking to dad. I was like, man, if I see I'm feeling a little bit better. If I see a long beard, if I see a turkey in one of these public areas from the interstate, I might grab my Nebraska tag and try to kill him. Just go hunt. And so at the same time we're driving, I'm driving, dad's talking to me on the phone. He's looking at his Google map And I'm just kind of looking at my phone, and I said, well, hey, I said, there's a big WMA coming up. Not a big one, but about a mile stretch of WMA that's just really long and skinny. And he said, well, I can see that from my map too. He said, it looks like there's a little field, like right in the middle of it that you'll be able to see from the highway. And I was like, oh man, I'm not seeing that in mine, but I'm gonna believe you. He said, and so I'm driving and he's like, looks like it's coming up here in about a couple hundred yards from you. So I'm driving and I look and I see this field and there's Gobbler just standing in that field. And I was like, Dad, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to go after this. Like I said,
that's
I would.
Pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome that he was, you know, looking at where you were going, like, hey, in half a mile, look to your left and there'll be a field, you know.
Yeah.
That's neat.
It was pretty cool. And it was really neat because it was like he got to be kind of right there, a part of it. So here was the bad part. So I'm on the interstate. I see this turkey right there. And I'm like, I can't just pull over on the interstate, right? Like, I've got to get around there some way, somehow. I end up having to go about 5 miles past this little WMA, take an exit, and then get on some farm roads to, like, work my way around. It ended up taking, like, 30 minutes.
Yeah, you didn't even know if you were going to be able to get there.
No.
You know?
No, I had no clue. I didn't know where the gate was. I didn't know where anything was for this play. But we just kind of follow, and Dad's looking at his map. He's like, well, if you take this road, that road may take you to it. And so I'm going down that road. He's like, all right, so now once you get here, maybe go this way. And so I'm looking at my maps, too, and we're just trying to figure it out. Long story short, 30 minutes later, I get to the gate, pick up my tag online, which is really easy with Nebraska. It's very easy in Nebraska. And I want to say it was like $124 or something, $128. Didn't really
pretty reasonable.
Yeah, but it's pretty reasonable. It's not like, it's not, you know, cheap, but it's not super expensive.
No.
Yeah.
But at that point, I had pretty much decided, like, you know, I've still got 5 days left in this trip. If I feel like it, even if this doesn't work out, I may just kind of hunt Nebraska for a day, you know, and just hunt here for the rest of the day since I have the tag. Well, I find the gate, start walking, and the way that this little place works, I told you it was long and skinny. Like, it was like a mile long and maybe like 400, 500 yards wide, this WMA. And you have the interstate or the highway, and then you have a river, a big ditch, basically, that has some water in it. I guess it's a river. But we know these things about turkeys. They don't necessarily like to cross a big highway, and they don't necessarily want to cross water, right? Like,
right.
We've tried to get them cross water to come to us many times. A lot of times they will. Most of the time, you know, they won't unless they just really want to do it. And so I start walking. I make it about 300 yards or so from the truck, and I'm kind of in the woods parallel to the – or would it be parallel? Direct, basically right in line with the field where that turkey was at. And so I'm in the woods, using the woods for cover. I hit my call, and I hear a noise – respond back to it. Like, I hear a noise, and I say a noise because all these 18 wheelers and trucks going by on this interstate really drown out noise. You can't really tell what it is. So I hit that call and I was like, I think that was a gobble. I'm not 100% sure that was a gobble. I think it was a gobble. I know it, whatever it was responding to my call, so I'm going to assume it was a gobble. And I know that there was a turkey right there. So I was like, okay, well, that sounded like it was a good ways up there. I'm going to walk just a little bit further. I take like 5 steps and I see the turkey run away from me, like through a clearing. I was like, what a loser. What is it? It's a Jim Carrey movie. Is it Dumb and Dumber? Where he's like, what a loser.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. So. Like, seriously, dude, like he was going to come directly to you. Like he was going to just, it was going to be awesome. He was going to come right to you. I'm like, you freaking idiot. So I was like, well, I'm here. I know there's a turkey here. I know there's an interstate this way and a river this way and just a little tiny bit of area that he's going to go to. So I'm just going to try to cut him off. So, and it's also a Merriam's, a hybrid Merriam's. I'll get more into that here in just a second. So I cut off to my right going towards that river. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to get to that river and then just set up, see if I can see him come in this direction. Well, I made about 60 yards and there's an open area in this in the woods. And I stop just to be sure that he's not there. And I'm stopping, I look around and I hear, bark! Just like a, almost like a chicken, bark! You know? And I look over to my right and I don't see anything. I look over here and I see this head like 5 yards away from me, this big gigantic red head, 5 yards away from me in a bush, like just right there. And we lock eyes at the same time. And as soon as he sees me see him, he tears out of there and starts running. And I shot him at like 10 yards and missed him. Then my gun jammed and I finally got it unjammed. And he was out there probably 45-ish yards, just running a straight line away from me. And ended up killing him. And it was not the,
classic.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody like loves turkey to jump shoot them like that. You know, it's not my favorite thing in the world, but for where I was in that moment when I saw that tail fan fly up after knowing that I killed him, I was like, that might be the most memorable turkey hunt I've ever had.
Yeah, when you get mad at them, and you're real mad at him, you'll do anything to kill him. You don't care how you kill it.
Yeah, it was crazy though because of just the whole situation and how quickly, like what Walter says, you need to document the way you feel right now because you don't know what's going to happen. You just don't know. And when I called Adam, I was FaceTiming him right after I killed it. I was like, "Isn't that crazy?" He was like, "I mean, it would be crazy for a lot of people, but for you, I feel like all your hunts kind of have some stupid, weird ending like that." But it was, I mean, it is insane how quickly things change in this sport. Like you go from the lowest of lows that you felt to I'm the dang king of the world.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Matter no time.
It's fun. That's why I love it. But technically it's in Merriam's country on the map, right? If you look at the NWTF map, I think it's purple that they use for Merriam's, and where I was is Merriam's country. This turkey did not have like super white tips. It had a little bit of white. It was white and bronzish in there, which you see that. You get more of this hybrid Rio look to them. But the things that were super Merriam's about him were his beard was like short and really spindly, and his spurs were really nubby, and his head was gigantic. I don't think I've ever killed. Did y'all see that picture of the snood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That thing was like 8 inches long.
He had a heck of a snood.
After that, I was like, what does a turkey even use this thing for? Apparently, this is what I read. It may have been an NWTF article, but apparently the hens prefer a longer snood gobbler. Like that snood is.
Yeah.
Like that's their size matters piece.
Yeah.
I don't know why that just struck me as weird. Because everybody who looks at a snood is like, I feel like this should be dirty. Like this is a dirty thing.
So we talked about, you know, you touch a turkey's head, you're like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, I don't think I ever want to touch anything with this same texture again, other than another turkey head. But
the guys, you know, that hold the turkeys by their head.
That's why they
do it. They like touching it.
Golly. Dang. Yeah, but it was a cool hunt, man. It was a heck of a way to end the season. I'm grateful. Like I say this a lot with turkeys. I'm grateful for each and every one of them, man. Like I hate once I get them cleaned and, you know, get all the tail fan. I keep everything off of a dang turkey. If there was a way that I could keep the head, I'd keep the head some for some reason.
Yeah.
You know,
freeze dried or something. I saw somebody was asking for heads of turkeys, you know, they'll freeze dry them, and that's how those they make their mounts look really good.
I've got two carcasses right now for my two Alabama birds that are in the deep freeze right now. Because the state was trying to use them, is getting them for research. It actually makes me feel a lot better that I didn't have to throw those away, that I still got them, even though I'm never going to take them out of that trash bag ever again.
It hurts me. I've texted y'all before. I'm like, do y'all ever just feel bad when you get rid of a turkey? You know, and we've probably said this multiple times on the podcast, but it's just, you know, I got into the gizzard stones this year, you know, collecting those. I mean, just one more thing to take off. You know, I got feet in my garage. My dad's like, why you got those nasty feet? You know, they shriveled up. I'm like, I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, they're cool. But anyways, last turkey episode of the season. I think you can probably tell in all of our voices that we are, at least Drew is ready to get back into deer hunting. Back to talking about bows and saddles and
bows and hoes.
No, I'm not ready to start talking about those.
no, I'm
bows.
I'm
with yes,
you. I'm with you, Drew. I'm ready to jump into the deer talking scouting. I've actually looked at the map a couple times, I guess, while we've been recording, just because I've, you know, just I enjoy looking at the map.
Just I know I was scrolling through Spartan Forge, just sitting there looking at some stuff and like, man, you know, and got a couple spots I've been eyeballing.
It's coming up, man.
So, stop. Yeah, and you're Parker, you were the one that's like, you posted like a picture of a buck and like, all right, time to turn the page, you know,
already.
And then, of course, you got Joey Bell over there sobbing like a 8-year-old girl put the shotgun up, I mean, on his Instagram story, and it's just like, Lord Jesus, Joey. So he's friend of the podcast. We can say that. We can say that about Joey.
Well, you know, I'm the kind of guy, I've always got to have something to look forward to. As long as I can look forward to the thing, man, I'm good. I will say that turkeys, with every year that passes, they become more and more special to me, and the hunt becomes more of a, I just become more, I don't know, addicted might not be the right word, obsessive maybe about
them. With the process. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, and learning to get better and learning, you know, the right ways to hunt them. Because I do think there are right ways to hunt them. I don't know. I don't always follow that rule, or the unwritten rules, I guess. But like, you know, there's reaping is a big deal that's in the kind of the public eye right now. There's probably a day and time where I would have been totally okay with it. As I get older, the more I just don't really want to do it. And there's also pretty good reasons as to why other people shouldn't do it as well. I'm probably never going to be the person that like puts that on somebody else. I think it's all a progression, you know. I grew up hunting deer over corn in Texas, over corn feeders. I prefer not to hunt over corn feeders these days. You know what I mean? Not that I think there's anything wrong with it. I shot a buck over a corn feeder this year in Texas. But that's just because that's the property that I was hunting. That's how you, a lot of times it's how you have to hunt a lot of places in Texas. But, just my preference, you know, I probably prefer not to hunt a deer over corn. Yeah. Same thing with turkeys, you know.
That's in what I've talked with you, your growth as a hunter. You have your different stages, and we may do a podcast on that with deer season, looking at that and how, you know, I think we've talked on it before on how our hunting tactics have changed over the time. And I'm like you, Parker, like, I have to have 50 pounds of corn out or I'm not going to mess with it. but now I've figured out, hey, that's hurting me more than I think it's helping me. And just killing, you know, spikes, 4 points, does, you know, just the progress. And then also the progress.
Wait, we're not supposed to kill spikes for 4 points or?
Oh no, you can. If that's okay, part of your progress, you know.
I never saw a 4 point. I don't like methane. I don't know what you're talking about.
They taste good.
Yes, they sure do.
But it's like you said, Burger, with your turkey season, and this, you know, this was going to be one of my questions to you for next turkey season. You know, so we're sitting here, we've killed all these turkeys. You've killed your grand slam as a whole. You've killed it in a year. You know, next season, you know, what's going to make next season special? Is it going to be that process of learning how to kill a bird a different way? Just little things, getting better at calling, you know, just how are you going to top this season? I mean, or make another memorable season?
Well, I think a guy could ask you the exact same question, because you kind of had one of those breakout type seasons where you killed more birds than you ever have by a long shot, you know. I think you could probably answer this question as well. But for me, the answer to that is I do not know. I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I want to go out. I want to get better at it. Right, with everything that I do, I want to be like, I'm not a good second place person, you know what I mean? Like, just mentally, I try not to be a jerk about it to people, but I want to be, when somebody has a question about deer hunting, I want to be like, I know the guy to ask, Parker. Like, that's just my mentality. Like, I love the idea of being as good as I can possibly be at it. Same thing goes with turkeys. I'm just later in my, I've deer hunted forever. I've turkey hunted for like 10 years. So I'm just kind of later in my progression, I guess. And so just kind of continuing that and continuing to, there's a guy by the name of Wayne Lackey. And just a super cool guy, just a turkey killing son of a gun. From here in Alabama, he's a good dude. I got to actually meet him in person at a BHA event back a couple
months
ago.
That's the one you had to talk about deer when you had turkey on your mind, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it at Oak Mountain State Park. Anyway, I got to talking with him a lot, and he's just these guys that you meet who they're turkey hunters. They are turkey hunters, and they carry themselves differently than other people, and they know what they're doing. They don't have to act like they're a professional. You just know by the way that they carry themselves that they're the most dangerous thing in the turkey woods. And that's, I want to see myself progress. It's kind of like my goal, as I find these guys like that, and I'm like, man, I want to, when I'm that age, when I'm, you know, 50, I want to be that. So I just trying to figure out the ways to progress to become that way.
Yeah, sweet.
So, well, we're right at an hour, boys. And I feel like I could throw up again. So.
That is cough over here, so I'm going to suck something down.
I think about throw up.
Oh, shoot. Guys, this is a fun one. Turkey season, done.
Don't
with us.
Don't be sick via Zoom.
Let's get started on some deer content.
Let's do it.
Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. As always, a big shout out to all of our partners. That's Go Wild, Spartan Forge, Tethered, New Canoe, and Scree Gear. You can keep up with Southern Ground Hunting by following us on Facebook and Instagram, or you can subscribe to us on the YouTube channel. And make sure you check out southerngroundhunting.com to pick up some of our merch, hats, t-shirts, stickers, stuff like that. I truly hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and we'll see you here again next week. Remember this, God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth, so go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.